there was going to be no other way to be able to take down an airliner. People have asked me who ordered us to ram the aircraft, but the truth is, no one did. We knew what we were up against. We knew what our mission was. We had to protect, and we had to do it in the only way that we had available. This was essentially a one-way mission.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. First Lieutenant Heather Lucky Penny graduated from Purdue University, majoring in literature. She planned on being a teacher, but when combat aviation opened up to women, Heather immediately signed up. She wanted to be a fighter pilot like her dad, John Penny. Once Heather finished her training, she was assigned to the 121st Fighter Squadron of the Air National Guard. September 11, 2001 was supposed to be a typical day for Heather at the District of Columbia Air National Guard. That morning, Heather was attending a briefing when at 8:45 a.m., someone leaned into the room and said, "Hey, a plane just flew into the World Trade Center."
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
That was the moment that changed Heather's life, as she was assigned to bring down Flight 93 in a kamikaze mission. In this extended episode, Heather will share her story, what it means to be brave, and why this is something that every single one of us can do. The worst terrorist attack in the United States history turned more than a few ordinary Americans into heroes. Nearly 3,000 people lost their lives on September 11, 2001, after Al-Qaeda hijackers flew airplanes into the Pentagon and World Trade Center. While all who endured that terrible day can be considered brave, there are some people who went above and beyond trying to save lives, and they ultimately prevented the tragedy from becoming worse. Heather Penny is one of those people, and in this extended episode, she'll share her story.
So I'm in the middle of this meeting when there's a knock at the door, and one of our enlisted troops, Dave Callahan, opens up the door and interrupts the meeting, which was really unusual. And he says, "An airplane just hit the World Trade Center." And we were shocked. We looked at each other and we're like, "What? How does that happen?" I mean, we're in Washington, D.C., and New York really isn't that far away, and we normally share pretty similar weather patterns. And we looked outside, and it was so blue, and we knew that there wasn't any forecast in New York to be terrible weather. It didn't really register as something that was significant. It wasn't until he came back the second time and said, "Another airplane hit the other World Trade Center, and it was on purpose." And that's when we realized that something had happened. We knew our nation was under attack. We were not an alert squadron. We didn't have live weapons on our aircraft. We weren't sitting alert, just waiting for the alarm to take off to protect our airspace. We weren't ready to take off. We didn't have any live weapons. And furthermore, we weren't even in any chain of command for the Air Force, for senior leadership, for the National Command Authority to even reach down and activate us and give us authorization to launch. It was really frustrating. It wasn't until the Pentagon was hit that Vice President Cheney actually said, "Don't we have fighters at Andrews? Somebody get them airborne." And that was when we finally had the authorization to take off. But we didn't have missiles by then. all we had on the flight line were just 105 rounds of lead-nosed bullets, not even high-explosive incendiary bullets, but just regular training bullets. And we knew that that would not be enough to be able to take an airliner down.
But what was the mission? Where were they to go? What were they looking for? There were no clear orders as to what to do. Reports circulated that a fourth plane, United Flight 93 out of Newark, New Jersey, was out there. Air Command speculated that it was also headed to DC for another strike at the Pentagon or a strike at the White House or the Capitol building.
I'm a young first lieutenant and I'm standing at the ops counter, and I remember desperately hoping that it would be me. And Mark Sasseville looks at me, he's our director of operations at the time, sort of like the adult leadership in the squadron. And he looks at me and goes, all right, Lucky, you're with me. And Raisin and Igor, all right, you guys wait until you get missiles. And when you get missiles, you take off. And I'm running out down the hallway to our life support, which is where all of our flight gear is. And I'm going through my checklist to make sure I don't forget anything. And the adrenaline is pumping. And okay, I got my helmet, I got my checklist, I got my harness. I'm zipping up my G-suit when Sass looks at me and he says, I'll take out the cockpit. And I would ram the tail because we didn't have weapons. There was going to be no other way to be able to take down an airliner. People have asked me who ordered us to ram the aircraft, but the truth is, no one did. We knew what we were up against. We knew what our mission was. We had to protect. And we had to do it in the only way that we had available. This was essentially a one-way mission.
Receiving the go-ahead from flight control meant only one thing. They would be flying a kamikaze mission, ramming Flight 93, a Boeing 757 aircraft, nearly seven times the weight of their F-16 fighter jets. Here, Heather shares how she was feeling, knowing what she had to do.
I've had people ask me if I was afraid, what did I feel like? And the truth of it is that I wasn't afraid at all. When we realized what needed to happen, what needed to be done, I quickly came to a realization that if this was where I was placed, then this is what needed to be done. Like, this was my purpose. And so all emotion really left me. All that I had left was the adrenaline and the thought of, you know, dear God, don't let me fuck it up. And remember, I'm still a young lieutenant. I'm still a new fighter pilot. And every pilot knows when you begin to deviate from the checklist, when you deviate from your habit patterns, that's when things start to screw up. And if anything mattered, now was the time. I could not accept any error. So I run up to the jet, and my crew chief's right there, and I grab the paperwork out of his hands, and I shake his hand, and begin to look through the paperwork, and I'm going to do this pre-flight as fast as I ever have, right? And I look up, and Sass is already in his cockpit, and he looks down at me and goes, Lucky, what the hell are you doing? Get in the damn jet. And that's when I realize, I don't just have to do this fast. I don't even have time to do it. I've got to make up procedures for something that I have never been trained for. I have to use my own systems knowledge to improvise. And so I scramble up into the cockpit, and my crew chief, he doesn't even buckle me in like they normally do. I mean, he just pulls the ladder. I'm not strapped in or anything. And at that point in time, I've got to start this aircraft and just go without any of the normal processes or procedures or rhythms that we normally do. I mean, it is the minimum. What are the things that I need to do to get the engines started?
As they sped out beyond the Andrews Air Force Base, flying low at about 3,000 feet, they could see black, billowing smoke streaming from the Pentagon. United Airlines Flight 93 was a domestic scheduled passenger flight that was hijacked by four Al-Qaeda terrorists on board as part of the September 11 attacks. It crashed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, during an attempt by the passengers and crew to regain control. All 44 people on board were killed, including the four hijackers, but no one on the ground was injured.
The passengers on Flight 93 are the true heroes that day. We did not know what had happened.
we didn't know about the heroism of the passengers. I've had people say, my goodness, I can't believe what you were willing to do that day. How brave, how heroic. The truth is, any one of us would have been willing to do the same thing. And there's nothing special about me or about Sass or Raisin or any one of us would have done it and could have done it. We all have that inside of us. As a matter of fact, that's what the passengers on Flight 93 proved to me. In the years that have passed since then, and I've had time to reflect on that day, that's really what I think about. Is not the terror or the trauma so much as it is the heroism of everyday, ordinary people. And that's what inspires me and actually gives me hope. Because that kind of heroism is everyday and ordinary in everyone around us. We have that kind of heroism in us. I mean, if we didn't, none of the incredible acts that we were privileged with witnessing that day. And it wasn't just the passengers on Flight 93. I mean, it was the first responders who rushed into the buildings as they were collapsing. The people in the towers that took the time to not save themselves, but to help each other. Or the strangers on the streets come to the aid of people they didn't even know in situations that had so much risk and so much danger.
Heather believes that every single person has the capacity to be a hero, and she knows this to be true from having witnessed incredible acts of bravery on that fateful day.
I mean, and I even think about the workers who, for the years after that September day, got up every morning and went to work to clean up Ground Zero, knowing that that work would slowly and painfully kill them. These are ordinary, everyday people. So we all have this capacity for heroism inside of us. So why do we need to wait for some kind of crisis to bring that heroism out? If we all have it inside of us, if we all have that ordinary, everyday hero, why can't we tap into that hero every day? That's the kind of stuff that changes our world. It's not necessarily the big things that you read in high school history books. Things that impact the world and change the world are the decisions and the actions that we take every day. So if we could learn how to tap into that heroism, imagine what our world would be like if we all lived connected to our inner hero. Because we need that kind of heroism every day.
Heather's list of accomplishments exceeds one instance of heroism. She served two tours in Iraq and remains a National Guard Reserve pilot. Even if Heather doesn't see herself as a hero, her readiness to sacrifice her life for the United States deserves praise.
I've spent a lot of time thinking about what makes a hero. It's not something that you either you're born a hero, you know, like those epic Roman Greek myths, you know, it's not some sort of demigod or blessing or some sort of act of fate or destiny. It doesn't take anything special. It's not like you're born with it or you're not. We all have that. So how do we tap into that? And the way that I think about heroism is it's comprised of three qualities, three characteristics that we can actually practice deliberately. We can practice bravery, belonging, and service in that kind of deliberate and mindful way to strengthen the qualities that we have inside of us so that when we're called upon, we're there to rise to the occasion. So bravery isn't doing things without fear. Bravery is doing things even though it terrifies us. It's about not letting fear rule our life. It's not letting fear rule our choices. It's about us choosing to do the right thing, even though it's terrifying. Belonging is about community. How do we connect with our community? How do we make those connections even through our differences? Of course, we have all these differences. And we don't have to agree. But what we do need to understand is that we are connected. And that through that connection, that's how we build community and belonging and shared purpose. It lifts us up outside of ourselves. And this gets to this notion of service, right? That's doing the things that aren't about us. It's not about our self-interest. And this is what's really, I think, important about the notion of these three qualities of bravery, belonging, and service, is that when they all come together, that's the piece about heroism.
Heather says now more than ever, we need leaders and organizations who are willing to be brave. Here she explains why.
We do need leaders today that are able to cultivate these qualities of bravery, of community, of service within their organizations. And they're uniquely positioned to be able to do that. If anything in my time in service in the Air Force that I learned is truly how impactful a leader can be on the culture of their organization. What they tolerate, what they espouse, what they model themselves, how they live, really impacts the whole culture of their organization. So what leaders can do today, from the very outset, develop and cultivate their own bravery and do so in a very transparent way to the people that work with them and work for them. And when I say transparent, that does mean giving insight into the risks that they're taking and why they're taking a stand to do the right thing and having bravery in terms of accountability and responsibility with themselves. And I think doing that begins to establish the bar for bravery amongst all of their people. And they can allow their people to be brave, to take those risks, to do things that are not safe per se, but to do things that they might be afraid to do, to stand up, to say the right thing, to address a bully or something. But creating those environments that enable bravery is something that leaders can model today. But I think one of the things that is so powerful is how leaders can create a culture of belonging. And this is, I think, what's truly unique about this notion of community and belonging is that when leaders deliberately and mindfully connect with the people around them, beyond just the tasks and the deliverables and the performance and all of that, but connect with people on a personal level, what that does is it strengthens those connections, which creates a sense of community. And when we belong to something, it aligns our interests with the interests of the organization, the interests of the community. So when leaders deliberately go out and connect with the people that they work with and that work for them as humans, as real people, when people are seen and they feel like they belong and they feel like they're valued, that transitions their priorities to that of service to the organization.
Given her incredible story and bravery, Heather is not only a hero, but an inspiration to all women and men. Here she shares the career lessons she's learned along the way.
Cultivate your male coaches and mentors and connections and friendships focused on genuine connection as well as your mission purpose. Seek out other women. We have to connect with other women. When I began to connect with other female fighter pilots, first of all, it helped me realize I wasn't crazy. Because sometimes as women, our perceptions in these very male-dominated environments, we begin to doubt ourselves. We begin to doubt our perceptions and our intuitions and our gut, you know. But connecting with other women can give you that recalibration and it can validate your perceptions. And it's just, there's something about the fellowship of other women who are going through something similar that is so powerful. And then finally, this is advice that I got from one of my old crusty fighter pilots. Never give up. Just never give up.
I first heard Heather's story at TEDx Chelsea Park as we were both speakers that day. I was blown away by her story and the lessons that we could all take away from it. If you want to hear more on how you can practice bravery every day, please check out her TEDx talk entitled 9/11 and Everyday Heroism. I really enjoyed hearing from Heather as to how each of us can make bravery a practice, and importantly, why we need leaders to create environments that support this at work. Thank you for tuning into our episode today. If you're looking for ways to support us apart from listening to our show, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also share and start a conversation on social media or your professional networks about anything that you've learned from our episodes. Thanks again, and I'll catch you all next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.